swept technique.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Dexter says Correa is a jinx. You just don't have any power in the lineup, says another texter. How big was Isak for this team? He was on pace for over 30 home runs. He was massive for this team. I think you have some power, though. I think Correa is going to hit for more power than he showed in Minnesota. Hopefully Yordan plays baseball again. That'd be nice. I think Sanchez is going to hit a few home runs. You're not going to replace Isak's power, but I think you have enough power.
Did you see the latest on Isak? Chandler Rome just 26 minutes ago tweeted out that Paredes received a PRP injection in his right hamstring and is going to rehab in an attempt to return this season. Astros GM Dana Brown said surgery was on the table, but Paredes chose rehab instead.
Yeah, I don't like
how do
that.
You feel about that one?
And he's going to play second base next year?
Sounds like they're trying to speed it up. Not that they're rushing. I just don't. That doesn't sound like it's going to end well.
I mean, you're in the race. His bat would help you.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds very a team that has lost all benefit of the doubt when it comes to injuries. This sounds bad, but he could DH. I mean, he could Kirk Gibson it. I admire, but I mean, you have Yordan too. You have Altuve
That's
as well.
The problem.
You have tons of DHs on this team. I do admire his attempt to get back and try to help this baseball team this year. Do they deserve a benefit of the doubt? Does it sound like the right plan? No and no. But I do tip my cap at Isak trying to help the team this year that has playoff aspirations.
Well, and notice that they emphasized that Paredes chose to rehab the injury instead, which kind of gets them from kind of still living in what everybody looks at them for.
They still have to approve it, though. Like, I wouldn't be willing to give them the benefit of the
doubt.
You can't
force to have surgery.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah, like, if something catastrophic comes from him trying to get back, I would not take away all blame from the Astros. They still approved it.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can't tell a player he has to
surgery. Yeah, you can't tell him he has to have surgery.
No, but you don't have to put him on the field.
His body, his choice.
It's the same thing with Christian Wilkins with the Raiders.
It's your choice to put him on the field.
There's many different ways that he can heal from an injury, but you can't force him to have surgery if he chooses not to.
No, I this kind of feels... Remember when Aaron Rodgers tore his Achilles a couple years ago and he kept telling us all fall that he was going to be back before the season was over? It kind of feels like that. Like, this feels like a guy trying to play team hero, but we know he's not actually going to get back.
I see what you're saying, but I think it's a terrible comp.
Okay.
I think mostly because of the injury. Like, from the attempt to come back comp, I think it's a fair comp. But the injury comp is a terrible one. Like, Rodgers had the surgery and was trying to recover
I'm just
and rehab.
Talking about
I know
attempt.
You are.
Okay.
I know you are. But I'm picking holes in it. I mean, this is a guy that's choosing not to have surgery so he can come back and take a few ABs in the postseason. I don't love it. I probably would prefer him to just, have the surgery, be ready to go at the start of the year, especially with their infield surplus now. At the same time, like, he wants to help his team this year because they're a playoff team. It's hard for me to be mad at the guy.
Isn't this kind of like the Lance McCullers second, where he eventually had the second surgery but didn't think he needed it the second time and was going to go through the rehab stuff instead, and then it elongated the process to the point where, 2.5 years later, we finally saw Lance McCullers start throwing a baseball again? Like, it's not the same timetable here, but I think from the standpoint of, look, he still leads the team in home runs, for God's sake. He was having a hell of a year, and he was a big piece to this puzzle that had fit so well all season long, and he realizes there still be a place for him. But at what level? He's not going to play defense, I wouldn't think, and if he does, I don't know where. But yeah, I do commend him for trying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the recovery. Like, I mean, maybe it works. Maybe he's fine, and it's just a ticking time bomb. I don't know. It's a weird thing. Hopefully he does this, and then as soon as the season is over, he still has the surgery.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I would want to happen. And they said it's like, what would it be? How long would it be? How long would his recovery be if he had surgery?
Oh, I thought it was a 6 to 8 month.
That long? So if he has it in, let's say he has it when the Astros are eliminated. Let's just say he has it in November. So November, December, 4 months. He'd be back in May. That's not awful.
It's not bad.
Like, I wouldn't mind him being able to get some pinch hits off the bench, and then it sacrifices me the first month of next season. I would take that trade-off.
Yeah, I think you got him for a couple more years of team control, too, where he's going to be a part of this mix, and you need him to be a part of your team. I don't want to to have him not do it and then have this thing linger and be again where you're going to do the same thing again next year.
Yeah, I would still hope he has the surgery in the offseason.
Yes.
Like, that would be something that I would really hope that he does. Because you're right, it would feel very McCullers-y. We're like, oh, I can just get through this with rehab and pain threshold. And then, oh, now he's going to be out for 18 months. So if he does go this route, and that's what's being reported, and it's what Dana Brown has commented on, I'm okay with it. And not that they're asking me, but how would you feel it? What would your druthers be? My druthers would be he comes back, tries to play, and then the moment that they're eliminated, he has the surgery anyways.
Yeah, and you look at it from the perspective of talk to the physicians. I know that's a cringe thing to say, but talk to the physicians to realize, can I do any further damage than I've already done if I do attempt to do the PRPs and try and come back and play?
Mm-hmm.
And then that should play a part in your decision-making as well, because the last thing you want to do is affect next year.
Yeah. You do have an infield surplus, though, so you can get away with a month and a half of no Isak Paredes.
For next year, yes.
So, like, this isn't the worst thing in the world. Now, if he doesn't have the surgery and then he tears it opening day next year, then we have a big problem on our hands.
Yeah.
I choose the right to recant this conversation if he doesn't have the surgery and then he tears it off the bone opening day next year.
Because I think it's what you were alluding to a week or so ago. But the biggest thing that happens with these injuries is he had the other leg first. You overcompensate, whether you realize it or not, and you mentally may say, no, I'm not. You can see it in the gait and the way the player runs and some of the things that he's doing that you're probably trying to overprotect the injured leg. And in the process, you end up hurting the good leg. And I think that might be what happened here.
Some people on the internet were mad I even brought up the suggestion that could be possible. And we have no idea that that's what happened.
Happens
no
idea. All the time.
I had trainers talking to me saying that is very... Like, it's a very common thing that they discuss is if you have, you know, a hamstring at 75%, does the other hamstring try to overcompensate to build up the strength that you need for the human body? And as we all know, you know, I view my body as like, you know, a temple. So I know a lot about the human body. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Horrible base running, says a texter. Texter, schedule doesn't tell me anything. I've heard nothing about the Astros' second half schedule. Was supposed to be the easiest in baseball. Just no excuse. Base running was atrocious. Perestica pitching Fromber. Fromber was great other than that six-run inning. Hitting Altuve and Cam. Perestica's had a bad year on the base pass, though. He's no Gary Pettis, I'll tell you that. Perestica clearly waved Sanchez to third the other day. He also waved Walker home like he was Pena or Smith on the bases with the monster and left with a short porch. That was a terrible
that
send.
That was awful. He was so dead to rights, Walker was. I was going to say that was – I was trying to remember which game that was, but that was just a bad send.
Saturday, no? Was it Saturday? I think it was Saturday. But terrible send. Is this what Dusty was referring to in regards to Yiner when he said he'll thank me later when he always chose Maldonado to start? I really don't know what Dusty meant by that. Maybe Dusty meant more. Or like, I know more than is being seen. Like, I see Yiner's deficiencies, and I'm kind of keeping him away from those deficiencies. Playing him every day would expose him more to those things. I don't really know if that, like, means thank you, like thanking him. I think it was more like, trust me, I know. I think he kind of misspoke with the thank you, but I definitely think that this justifies his defense, rather, what Dusty saw.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think at a certain point, Dusty probably would tell you exactly what he was thinking or what he meant by saying it. But I think that, yeah, there was probably some limitations or some lax moments that Dusty had already seen, experienced, that he hoped that, like, a young player would kind of work hard and get his way out of, that maybe didn't. But maybe those are the things he saw.
Yeah. Couple of textures want to bring back Martin Maldonado to coach Yiner Diaz. He's still employed by the Padres, right?
They let him go.
Did they DFA him?
Yeah, they DFA'd him the other day.
Maybe they can bring him
back. They
made
the trade with the Royals to get the catcher.
Bench coach him.
So he's out there.
I'd be down for that. I'd be down for him to be a bench coach. I don't want him to be on the roster, but a bench coach is fine. Key from L.A., funny how you guys always try to find something good if the Astros got BTA. Haven't been good since your midseason World Series. Laughing face emoji, laughing face emoji. Key from L.A. is right. The sweep of the Dodgers in L.A. right now is the pinnacle of the year. It has regressed since then. He's right about that.
Funny about how Key from L.A. likes to crawl under his rock and hide when his Dodgers get their ass handed to them. And then when he gets a chance to kind of come out from under his rock and point fingers, he's all over it. But he doesn't take his medicine much and makes a whole hell of a lot of excuses when his team sucks.
He texted us that Monday. In fairness to Keith.
And blamed everything but his team.
He didn't. He didn't accept the fee.
He took the injury out.
He did. He took the injury card. He played the injury card. Well, Keith from LA, we'll play your injury card now for the Astros. Although I don't know if that's that might be a week too old to play the injury card.
Pitching staff still injured.
They are. That's true. Although I don't know if they're going to be any good. I saw the Astros picked up a pitcher from the Marlins after the trade deadline, and I saw some traction on Verlander being traded. How does that work after the deadline? Are they just not eligible to pitch in the postseason? The minor leagues don't have a trade deadline. You can trade minor leaguers all the time. So that's why the Astros traded for a minor leaguer, because it was a minor league trade, and then they activated the minor leaguer. Justin Verlander cannot be traded. The trade deadline of July 31st is for the big league players. Verlander cannot be traded. Now, he can be DFA'd, he can be released, and then the Astros could pick him up as a free agent. To be eligible for the postseason, I believe that you have to be on the roster at least once prior to September 1st.
There's a deadline early in September for the playoff roster, but I want to say that the pitcher that they acquired from the Marlins, they had DFA'd, or they were going to DFA. So the Astros are able to trade for him because
you can trade for a minor leaguer. Period.
So as soon as they,
I'm not arguing that he wasn't DFA'd.
I'm asking you. As soon as the team decides to DFA him, that means he's destined for the minor league. So therefore, he becomes tradable.
No, you can trade any minor leaguer that's not on the 40-man roster.
That's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, once the team announces that they're DFA'ing him, then he's a minor leaguer and he can be traded for.
No. It depends on if he has a minor league contract or a big league contract. Because if the Giants DFA'd Verlander today, they couldn't trade him today.
Yeah, and I'm specifically talking about the Marlins guy that he was on. I thought he was on their roster, or maybe he wasn't.
I don't think you can be on the 40-man and be traded.
Okay.
You have to have a minor league contract in order to be traded after the Major League Baseball trade deadline. So, I mean, the Astros could trade Walker Yannick today. But you're trading him for another minor leaguer. Mm-hmm. And you have to be on the roster, I believe, have at least a game of service. A day of service, not a game. A day of service prior to the September call-ups. I believe that's the rule. I'm pretty confident on that. Another texter, with Correa coming back and being under contract for a couple of years, is there any chance we move Paredes to first to replace Walker? I'm trying to figure out what we do with two good third basemen, Adrian.
I mean, I don't think Walker's going anywhere. It's going to be really interesting. We've talked about that. And of course, the Astros, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Mm-hmm. But it's an interesting situation that's going to be arising if everybody's healthy at the start of next season, because you don't have enough spots to fill everybody, because Walker, I don't think anywhere is going anywhere at first base. As long as he's on the roster, he's playing first base. Paredes, I would think, is third, but Correa's already moved once and Correa seems to like third base. Now you're going to ask Correa to play second base. It's the most logical position, I think, for him, because I don't think if your options are just the guys that we're talking about, Correa, Paredes, Pena, and Walker, I just don't think that Paredes is – I think he's too bulky and big to play second base.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Jeremy would be the right guy for the job, but Jeremy has to agree to do it.
I think he's your best shortstop, though.
I'm sorry. Correa is the best guy for the job. He has to agree to do it and move yet again.
Robert Ford asked
Correa?
No, Robert Ford asked Dana – they do a Sunday hit. Like, what would be the plan next year? And he's like, we might try Isak there. We might try Correa's there. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I mean, heck, Isak might miss the first 2 months of the year recovering from hamstring surgery. So, like, it's really not that you can talk about now. They'll have options. Like, if they think everybody's healthy, maybe they will shop Walker and $40 million left on his contract around. Maybe they try to make a sweetheart deal and get a Kyle Tucker return for Jeremy Pena. Like, they're going to have options. I don't think anybody's making that decision quite yet. I mean, the goods I have are Hunter Brown and Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa, I thought, looked the part. He played good third base. I thought he had good at-bats. Couple of deep flyouts to center field. Hit the home run over the Monster. Those were the only two goods I had.
I added to those two others. Christian Walker, two home runs in two games. And again, he was 3-for-10 in the series with two bombs. So I'll take that from him, because hopefully that it's still showing progress for him. And Caratini, unfortunately, when we were talking about everything we were talking about, the one guy that has also kind of had to take a kind of a backseat role, he doesn't play in two of the three games. The game he plays, he has four hits.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough, man.
It is tough. Yeah, any other goods you wanted to add on there, Brian?
Besides the one you guys had, because I had Caratini and Walker also, but I thought, Kurt on Saturday, 3 Ks over an inning in the third, and then Caleb Ort, who you never know what you're going to get with Caleb Ort, but he had two scoreless outings with 4 Ks, so Tip of the cap to Caleb Ort.
It was the Caleb Ort revenge series. Everybody was talking about Bregman playing his former team. They were talking about Correa's reunion. It was Caleb Ort going up against the Red Sox, his former team. It was Caleb Ort revenge series, and he let it known because he pitched well. Eric says
that's certainly the headline.
It was the headline. The Correa trade made getting a starter irrelevant because he can lower the ERA of the entire staff by himself. Mound visits. It's a good point. Mound visits were lit.
I did think about you on Friday when he had a mound visit, and Hunter Brown immediately got out of second and third.
Mound visits are unbelievable. Carlos Correa's mound visits.
The same. I'm
best
watching
attribute.
I'm watching it going, uh-oh. Jeremy's watching this right now.
I love a mound visit from Carlos Correa. There's nothing that excites me more in Major League Baseball than Carlos Correa visiting a mound. And to visit the hallowed mound of Fenway Park, even better. Even better.
The mound of Ruth. The mound of Schilling.
Can you imagine? Pedro stepped on that
Pedro.
Mound. Ruth. You mentioned Ruth. I don't know. Was it that Fenway? Didn't Fenway burn down? Maybe that was Wrigley.
I have no idea.
Remember. You've had a lot of greats go through there, but none of them had a mound visited by Carlos Correa. Fromber and Hunter Brown and Colton Gordon should be excited. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Texans are at Greenbrier today. What has piqued your interest with the Texans being at Greenbrier? And do you
go Texas
when your team goes away? Do you like them going away for camp for a little bit? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Texans are in Greenbrier, the Appalachians, up in West Virginia. They said the weather there is beautiful. Yeah. It's like in the 60s.
Yep.
Weather here got pretty good after the rain came through. It's like in the 70s when we got to work today.
Yeah, it was
70s, August 4th. How about that?
Even last night, because we got rain last night in Sugarland. And last night walking the dogs, Lisa and I both said you could definitely feel the humidity kind of went down, and it was more tolerable.
Flex. Why? You're flexing that you have enough means to be a pet owner.
That's not a flex. Lots of poor people have animals.
Enough of a flex that you have the means to walk around a neighborhood.
Oh, come
on. Yeah, flex that you're correct. That you're exercising.
That you care about your body.
That's the biggest
HOA,
stretch I've heard today.
Those are three different flexes.
I thought Israel's 252 batting average stretch was a stretch, but this one's quite a...
Those are three flexes, Brian.
No, not a single
pet
one of
owner,
them is a flex.
He can afford dog food, neighborhood to walk in, that he has the ability to walk.
You're telling
incredible
blankers to check his privilege?
Three different flexes.
Yeah, especially since there are even there's organizations out there will give you the food for the pet.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not familiar with that. Is that your case?
No.
There you go.
I think you know that. Yeah, since we're both working.
Check your
privilege.
No.
There you go. Even more of a flex now that we can cross that scenario out.
Rome says the surgery would carry 6 months plus. GM's Dana said 6 months plus.
Well, he's not doing it. He's not doing it until at minimum first day of the offseason.
Yeah.
If he gets it done November 1st, I'm cool. I'm cool with it. First day of the offseason, I'm cool with it. But if he's not having the surgery at all, that is a dangerous game to play.
Yeah, then now you're already screwing with next year. I mean, I think worst case scenario for all of this was, even if it is surgery, he'd be ready to go for next season. When you start delaying and messing it with it to where it could significantly, or at least to some point, hinder your next season.
I'm not really worried about that. I'm not worried about him missing the first 40 games next year. I'm not. Like, you have Walker at first.
It's not ideal.
You have whoever, Altuve, if you want to play him at second or left, doesn't really matter there. Dubon's under contract. Urias is under contract. Pena's at short. Correa's at third. I don't care if Isak misses the first 40 games next year.
It's not ideal for me to have my best offensive lineup every single game. Sure, you could get by, but I would like to have this entire roster fully healthy from the jump next year, because I think that they could jump on everything.
That would be great. Or do you want him to be big bat for you in the postseason? Well,
yeah.
That's the alternative. Which alternative do
you
like?
But I'm saying when the injury initially happened, the thought process, I think, with everybody was, hey, it sucks. And initially, I don't think anybody was even thinking that he'd be out for the rest of the year. But even so, worst case scenario was he'll be out for the rest of the year, but he'll be ready to go at the start of next season. Now we're looking like there's a scenario where he might not be, and I don't think anybody was counting on that one.
We're also not considering the scenario where the rehab goes great. He plays he plays starting in the September, and he doesn't miss a game at all next year.
That'd be great. That would be great.
But the options that were presented right now, would you rather have Isak for the playoffs, or would you rather have him for the first 40 games of 2026?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the only two choices, then I would love to have every option on the table for the playoffs.
Well, those really are your only two choices.
You just
considering the news.
Yeah, I mean, again, and considering his choice, ideally, we don't know the severity of the hamstring.
We kind of do. We know at minimum that it could need surgery. Well, actually, we know that it could have surgery. They're saying that they could have operated, but he chose not to.
Yeah.
So we do know, we do have an idea.
I would hope the discussions have happened like we talked about, where you at least want to know, hey, if I do try this PRP and I do try and come back this year, can I do further damage to the hamstring? Or is it just, you know, what it is what it is. And if I need surgery, the surgery is no matter what more I do to it.
I'm just guessing, but if he has an injury right now that could require surgery, I imagine that it can get worse.
There's situations where you can, like, it's completely torn.
But that's when it requires surgery.
Sometimes it doesn't have to be completely torn. Because most pulls are a tear.
I mean, that's a complete hamstring.
But most pulls are a tear.
Right. But if you're requiring a surgery that you're going to be out 6 months, that's a severe injury.
Sure. I'm not doubting severity. But
if he had another injury that's like as bad as possible, like let's just entertain the conversation. He recovers. He doesn't have surgery. He's playing in September. He does it again. I think that we're looking at a 6 month timeline regardless.
Okay. I don't know from a medical perspective if that's indeed the case, and, you know, tearing it completely or tearing it off the bone in certain situations or things like that make it even worse and with a longer recovery time. But I commend him for trying to come back. And ideally, yes, I understand the first, you know, playoffs aren't made in the first 40 games of the series. I mean, of the season next year, I'd love to have him. I don't know at what level he would be back for the playoffs this year.
Right.
But yeah, it'd be ideal.
The other thing too, is that you do have a surplus of infielders now. Like we're mm-hmm. sitting here trying to figure out a way that they all can play next year. Well, a good way they can all play is if Esau comes back 40 games into the year, and then maybe you have another injury by that point. Aggie Matt, come on, Branham, his body, his choice. It is his body, and it is his choice, but I reserve the right to tell him what he should do with his body.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm sure that in the back of his mind, too, it's one of those situations where I got to get back, too, because I want to play third base. I don't want to be left out of this mix. You know, I think he likes it here, too. And I'm not saying that's what's driving him. But any competitor on a team that he knows is in the middle of a pennant race with a chance to do something now with what they did at the deadline, I'm sure he wants to be a part of it.
Yeah, maybe he was trying to help his team. I just hope he has the surgery. As soon as the offseason is here. All right, 713-780-ESP. Let's get to the Texans at Greenbrier. What is piquing your interest about Texans training camp? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. A few of the things I just said might get me into a little bit of trouble, but that's okay. I have HR&P on my side, Human Resources and Payroll. It's owned by Mike Holly, Cougar, go Cougs. Used to protect a Heisman Trophy winner. Now he wants to protect your business, and that's how you know the company's good. Chris Fisher's over there, too. He's an Aggie to balance things out. He's good people as well. They're all good people at HR&P. But business owners, let HR&P help you. That's the brass tacks of it all. They can help you with HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. You don't like to do any of that stuff? Well, call HR&P and they're going to help you. They're a great, great ally to have in your corner. They're always up to date and staying up to date with all the trends in the industry, in the business world. We'll let you know everything that you need to know on what's going on. But no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small the job, how big the job. HR&P completely customizes a plan for what you or your business needs. You need a little bit of help with the HR thing. They got you. You don't like to do the payroll stuff anymore. Numbers annoy you. They got you. You don't want to do any of it anymore because you want to play more golf. They got you. They do it in a way that's unique, too. Technology meets service. They have the best technology in the game, but you're going to fall in love with their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. We mentioned the great people they have over at HR&P, and that is the truth. You'll never talk to a stranger either. You'll always talk to someone who knows you. They know your business needs. They're going to become familiar with your business. Give them a call at 281-880-6525. Let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or just visit them online at HR&P.com. .net. That's HRP.net.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What's going on at Greenbrier? Huh? What has your interest peaked? Texans Training Camp, 713-780-ESPN. HRNP listener line. Summer Circuit continues this week. Join ESPN Houston every week as we visit different restaurants all over the greater Houston area. Each week, you can register to win our grand prize of the summer. A pair of brand new e-bikes from Power On Electric Bicycle Company, a $4,000 value. For registration, stop by the promo table at the broadcast. This week, we're going to be out at BB's Tex Orleans. And Katie, come out, join us this Friday, noon to 6 at BB's Tex Orleans. And Katie, you can find the entire summer circuit at ESPN975.com. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What's piquing your interest at Texans Camp, Blankers?
Well, I mean, in looking at everything that continues to go on, I'm interested in terms of from an offensive perspective. I understand they're going off up against a hell of a defense. But a couple things on that front have kind of piqued my interest. One is the fact that at a certain point, when do we start worrying about what this offense is, how good this offense is going to be?
Now, right now.
No, I'm saying that because there's a lot of people losing their mind already that are like dialed into everybody that reports every single play that's run on 11 and 11.
But if they're right.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right now.
So I'm asking the question.
We're right now.
All right. If that's your answer, so be it. I'm just looking at it from the perspective of I understand you're not going to go up against a Texans level defense every week. But at a certain point, like when is it fair to turn it back and say, okay, but offensively, it's not just the offensive line.
Right now,
if CJ is not making the throws that he needs to make, if the fact that, you know, we're looking at guys dropping passes, we're looking at, you know, the offense not clicking, it's fair at a certain point to look at it and go, now that's a massive concern because the defense, yeah, they could be the best of the two sides. They could do a lot to carry this team this year. Your offense still has to do some things and they have to be able to move the football a little bit. And whether it's ball control or otherwise, you have a lot with C.J. Stroud where you feel like they're capable of doing this, and it's a little bit concerning at a certain point that they're not doing anything offensively because every report you see from everybody is defense dominated. Defense just owned the offense. That's not great.
So what is your answer?
I think it's about two games into the preseason. In two games in because – and maybe it's week three when you actually have the ones going for a longer period of time. But at a certain point, as good as it's good training and it's good to go up against a great defense, you have to be fair and reasonable and you have to be, you know, look yourself in the mirror and go, and Nick Caserio and go, maybe this offense doesn't have enough, whether it's the line or otherwise.
How are you going to fix it at this point? Like, that's the danger to me. That's kind of like the trouble hearing that statement.
But you know that you say how? It's not easy, right? But the answer is that you know that teams are going to have tough decisions still to make. Maybe they're looking to move on from a veteran. Maybe they drafted someone to where there's a competition and a position battle to where you might be able to find a guy that's better than what you currently have. But at a certain point, you have to kind of focus in on and identify your offense just might not be as good as people think it's supposed to be.
So what are positions you'd be looking to upgrade?
Well, you know, like you look at the offensive line specifically and you spent a lot of money on Cam and he got hurt today at left tackle. I think Ursary is going to be good and everybody thinks he, you know, long and short term, he's going to be a mainstay on your offensive line. I think Howard is fine. But I think that you have to look at the interior linemen and you have to make sure that who you brought in with the belief that systematically with a different system and because of the fact that you got different guys that are going to execute the way you want to play offense, you have to be honest with yourself and see if those guys are truly capable of doing those things.
I think there could be some, like maybe one position on the offensive line where you could find help there. And look, it might not even be starters. Maybe it's in your 2D. Maybe you can find a swing guard that's a little bit better than the interior guys you have there. I think you're pretty set at receiver, unless there's injury, knock on wood. You're not going to be looking at training camp, cut casualty receivers, probably not tight ends, I don't think, right? Like, I think you're okay at tight end. I think that interior offensive line could be a position where that could be truthful, and also running back. I think they could be in play for running back depending on Mixon's situation.
Yeah, I notated today, is it possible, and I meant to, for this segment, I was going to ask you guys, is it possible that their number two running back is not on the roster yet? Because you hear conflicting reports about a guy like Nick Chubb. you hear that, you know, some people are saying, you know what, whether he lost a burst or he doesn't have what he used to be, he's still, you know, D'Amico says, when he gets his pads behind it, his running, he, you know, he's still going to get yards for you. And he said that today. But you still are going to need a guy that's not just going to be like, you know, a couple yards in a cloud of dust. Like, you have to have a guy that maybe, again, just like we were talking about, that they're not, he's not on the roster yet, but depending on what other teams do and other talent that they have at the running back position, maybe he's not on the Texans roster yet.
I, going back to the offensive line, like, I get, because my level of concern kind of, I think, starts now. Because, I mean, Caserio told us, what was it, last week, or not us, but the Texans Raider, like, last week or the week before, that once they got to West Virginia, then to the Greenbrier, and then into the Minnesota game, which is this weekend, we were kind of going to know who our offensive line is. And once they get into the preseason, preseason game one, they play probably, what, a series? Well, week right. two, they'll play a little bit more. And then week three, none of them are playing. Because, I mean, I know that used to be the dress rehearsal, but those days are gone. So we're not going to see a whole lot of dress rehearsal in the preseason. I think you're kind of looking at what you're going to have. And I'm also getting tired of, and I'm guilty of this as well, but making the excuse of, well, they're facing the Texans defense. They're facing a top three defense. Of course they look bad. Well, okay, sure. Maybe they can still get to the postseason with this offensive line, and I think they can. But what happens when they get to the playoffs? They face the Chiefs, the Bills, the Ravens, other elite defenses. Like, the idea of, well, it's okay because they're not going to face a defense as good as the Texans. Well, they will, to ultimately get to where we want them to go.
Unless the Texans are the best defense in the NFL, Brian.
Well, they would
still... Then they won't play a defense as good as the Texans.
Okay, fair. I mean, technically that is correct. But I've heard this excuse a lot, and I've made it as well. But as I thought about, like, it's true, they will look better than they will they have in practice against, you know, top three, top five defense. But In order to get past the second round, you know, get past to where they've been before, to take that next step, they're going to have to face other elite defenses.
The issue that I have with this conversation is, where are you getting help?
You're not.
Like that. So that's,
you're not.
Then either it changes your take or it changes your expectation. Because there's not moves that you're making. And look, you're always looking to, you know, marginally help your team. But for there to be significant improvement of this offense between now and the start of the season, or between now and week eight, it's going to have to be on development. Like, you're not, there's not this magical player out there that you're acquiring really at any point this year that's going to make your offensive line going from 25th in the NFL to 15th in the NFL. So, like, it has to be player development for them to have a substantial improvement. Now, the hope, like, if you're looking at it from an optimistic point of view, is that your defense is just so great, and your offense, which is in year one, and they're figuring it out, and by week eight of the NFL season, they're starting to click on all cylinders, and they've reached their ceiling, and their ceiling is high. But it does feel like we should probably change our expectation of this offense based on what we've heard of offense versus defense. Now, look, maybe their offense is going to be very, very good, but we just don't have a tell on it right now because the defense is so good and they're very early in year one of Nick Haley.
Look, it's fair that you had a new offensive coordinator. You got a new playbook. You've got everything new on the offensive side, and you still got D'Amico, and you still got everybody in place on the defensive side of the football, and you've added talent. So they always say the offense is a little behind the defense when you start camp. It's fair to say that, yes, the offense is behind by that and everything that I just mentioned. But it's also the reality of not hanging on too long going, hey, I just really believe in the players we brought in. And I believe they're going to figure it out at a certain point. And this whole connectivity is going to happen and the chemistry is going to be there. And like you said, by week 7 or 8, if it looks bad and you have early indications that it isn't going to get better, I hope they're honest with themselves quick enough to realize there's still an opportunity. Maybe it's one player. Uh-huh. Maybe there's a couple because of who gets cut instead of picking guys off the street in the middle of the season, that maybe there's a player or two from another team that you can still get right now to still save some of the offense before you get 8 games into the season.
I just don't know how you're helping it significantly.
If the guy's getting cut, he's getting cut for a reason. I mean, maybe it's marginally better than a Lakin Tomlinson, but it just doesn't feel like that's like a magic cure-all.
No.
Like, you picked up Andrews off the scrap heap last year. But I'm saying that if
you don't know what he is.
But Brian, let me finish. What I'm saying is that I'm not saying you're picking him up off the scrap heap. I'm talking about now maybe there's a veteran that's been in the league for a while, and maybe there's a team that has some young guys, or they're trying to cut salary. And between now and the start of the regular season, you have an opportunity to get a guy that's not street worthy.
What's best case scenario, though?
You get a guy that can actually play better than one of your guys that you have that you don't have to give up much for because the team is not even looking for compensation in return. They're looking to get it off their books.
And how many points does that help you a game?
It depends on who it is. I mean, I think
that's why I asked best case.
But I think if you get an offensive lineman, say you get a good guard or even a center, but I think say you get a guy on the interior offensive line.
Let's call him above average starter center. Like, okay. Like, I think it's feasible. I think it's in play. My point is more, let's say you do find that guy and it is an upgrade, no argument. How much is that really helping you? Like, I think it helps you 3 points a game maximum. I think it helps you a quarter of a win maximum.
But like I said, I think the position matters too, because I think that if we're talking about, I hope Joe Mixon's ready for week one.
Okay, let's do the running back thing then.
You need a running game. And right now, if there's doubts that the guys that you have on the roster are capable of being a guy that can be at least an average running back to get you on, bridge the gap until Mixon returns, I think a running back that you could get that actually is a good NFL, I mean, an average NFL running back, makes more than a 3 point difference if it's the difference between running the football and not running the football.
Okay. Like, I'm not even saying that you're wrong. I think the argument and the conversation here lies with how much is it actually helping you. Mm-hmm. I think their running back room could use some help right now if Joe Mixon's not available in week one. Like, Nick Chubb, we've had concerns about Nick Chubb and what he was going to be. And then we've heard reports out there on Nick Chubb that kind of back up those takes. Woody Mark's a free agent. Jawar Jordan's a second-year player that didn't play at all last year because of injury. So let's say you go out there. Let's say you even find a running back that's better than anything you currently have outside of Joe Mixon. Let's say he's better than Woody Marks. He's better than Nick Chubb. Running back better than those guys. I don't know if that helps you more than 3 points a game. And if it does, how many wins is that adding? A half win instead of a quarter win?
The thing is, too, is what we don't know. It could be that you might have to address both because your offensive line might not be capable of blocking for whatever kind of running back you go out and get that's better than what you currently have on your roster, and vice versa. Maybe you get a guy that fixes it, but right now you don't have a running back that's capable of toting the rock on an average to a slightly above average level until Mixon returns. So that's why the dilemma becomes, and the honesty with Nick Caserio has to be, hey, look, at a certain point in this camp, I've got to be honest with myself and this team, especially if the defense is that good, that maybe we got to find a fix or two before we even start the season.
Yeah, I just feel like Caserio is always looking to upgrade his team. Like Caserio is always turning over every stone and bringing in players. I think it's one of the good things that Nick Caserio does. I feel like a lot of general managers kind of like, if it's not a significant upgrade, they won't bring in a player. It has to be significant for them to do it. I feel like Nick Caserio, if they're better by one iota, he's willing to bring that guy in within reason. So I trust Caserio to be looking for players he thinks will help. I'm more of the thought that realistically, in where we're at in the NFL calendar, that there's not this one elixir player that's changing the forecast of the Houston Texans offense.
No, but to my point, I don't think it just has to be one. I think there's a possibility that they still might need multiple guys that aren't on this roster yet, depending on where this offense honestly truly is.
So what's best case scenario, though? Let's say starting center, starting running back, what else? Right guard? Like, how many players are really going to be out there that can upgrade the starting lineup of this team?
So it would be left guard, right, Tomlinson?
I mean, I think they like Tomlinson, but I don't – like, we can play out any scenario.
No, so I'm saying it could be an interior offensive lineman. It could be center. It could be left guard. It could be a running back. But at least you know that there's still a possibility if you handle it the right way. Because you're right. Look, there's general managers we talk about all the time that just are going to be so stubborn or set in their ways. We got the guys that – we identified are going to make us better, and we're going to stick with it. And we're going to try and, like, you know, square peg round hole if we have to stick with them. I think that Nick stuck with Kenyon Green a little too long, but at least at a certain point he was willing to pull the plug. So I think I just want to make sure, with as good as this defense is, that it isn't just this great defense dominating this offense, but it'll be fine against others.
I think it's very difficult to find three starters from August 4th to week one. Even if they do, I don't know how much of an upgrade it would make. I do have hope, though. I have a realistic hope with what we've seen, and it pertains to this conversation. 713-780-ESPN, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Subscribe to ESPN Houston for free on YouTube. found the killer bees. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, Kenyon Green fiasco, biggest reason the O-line sucks right now. I mean, Blake Fisher ain't looking great either. I mean, you're looking at Blake Fisher, second rounder, that doesn't look like he's going to be a starter. Kenyon Green, who's like, say what you will about Kenyon Green, I completely agree, bust, didn't work for you. I hope it works for him in Philly. He's an Atascocita guy. We were his first radio show he was ever on, at least as a pro. He got you C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He got you a starting caliber player. Right now, his impact is more than Blake Fisher's impact.
No, at least you were willing to cut your loss at a certain point, and it turned it into a, maybe not a net gain overall, but it could be, because if C.J. Gardner-Johnson's got stuff left in the tank to really help, and so far it looks like he's given an extra spark to this defense and a little more attitude to this defense on top of everything else, to where at least you turned it into somewhat of a positive, where a lot of GMs are just going to sit there and roll with it, force feed it to you, and decide that no matter what you can see with your own eyes, that they're going to tell you it's a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah, it's at least he's got you a starter, Kenyon Green. Blake Fisher's, at best right now, your swing tackle. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Joe, you're in the hive with the bees. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. What's up, Joe?
I get it, the talent deficit on this line, but really, to me, I'm more interested. I mean, 5-1 bodies given effort to beat last year. If they're coached up, can they pick up a stunt or a blitz? I mean, I'm really more concerned about how fast CJ can pick that system up. It sounds similar to what Tim Kelly brought here, which, man, it took Deshaun Watson a year and a half to be deadly within the system. He got by on physical talent. Davis Mills, I mean, he started to pick it up, what, 11, 12 games into the season? It's not an easy system for a quarterback to pick up. And I think coaching could help that line a lot.
Well, I mean, look, a lot of that remains to be seen. I'm not going to sit there and tell you that a Tim Kelly offense or something is going to be too difficult for CJ to pick up. And I think that he's going to get all the coaching he needs. I think he's a sharp enough football mind. He's going to be just fine. I think as it relates to picking up the stunts and the blitzes and everything else, again, you're looking at a guy like Ursary that looks like, because I was going to throw Juice Scruggs into the mix too. You look at Blake Fisher, you look at Juice Scruggs, where they were taken and what these guys were supposed to do. It wasn't just all on Kenyon Green. There were guys that you drafted in a position to where within a year's time, if not sooner, and definitely down the road to where, especially like a Scruggs, he's supposed to be a guy that's supposed to be helping you and becoming a starter on this team. Neither guy looks like they're going to get that opportunity this year. So you have to question all three when you just say Kenyon Green.
Yeah. They traded up for Juice, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that appears to be Caserio's blind spot. I am willing to give it one more OC, though. Like, maybe it was a blind spot with Slowick, because Slowick's, and we'll get to some of that stuff in a little bit. So, you know, maybe it was more of, like, who's coaching them up. Like, because maybe Joe's right. Maybe they're going to be really good at, maybe they won't be as talented as they were, but they're going to be really well coached and disciplined, and they pick up stunts, and, you know, are they going to get beat by the Will Andersons and Danielle Hunters of the world? Probably. But is a stunt going to beat them? Hopefully not. And that's the hope that I have, I guess, is that it's hard to know right now, because they're playing one defense.
Right.
They're playing one defense. They're mixing and matching. They're very early in the infancy of this offense and what Nick Caley's going to do. So it should progress and it should get better. Like, that's the hope. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm saying if you're looking at this from an optimistic point of view, the defense, which it's in its third year now with D'Amico Ryans, has a lot of returning players, should be very far ahead of the offense, which has a lot of new pieces, a revamped offensive line, an entirely new offensive coaching staff for the most part. So the defense should be way ahead of the offense as we talk on August 4th. The hope is the offense continues to progress. The hope is the defense is the best defense in the NFL that's making the offense look bad. And by the time you get into the fourth week of the NFL year, the Texans offense is looking like it's going to be pretty good.
I mean, you honestly look at this and say they couldn't be much worse. And we've talked about this before. You couldn't be much worse than a team that was in the lower, what, three or four in the entire league last year as a unit, offensive line-wise. So you get rid of individuals to hope that that hand becomes a fist, and because you hope that with better communication and better chemistry between the offensive line, the stunts and those things that were, they were embarrassed on, because you're gonna understandably face defensive players that are just going to be better than what you have on offense to block them, to stop them. But when you put up a defense that has two of the better defensive backs in the league, and maybe one of the better duos in the league, two of the best, you know, pass rushers in the league, and as a duo, And you say that every single play you're going up against those guys. Yeah, that's going to be tough, especially for a young offensive line to try and a new offensive system to try and be successful against.
That's the hope. That's the hope. Yeah. Less penalties on the offensive line would be great too. That would less, you know, first and 15s, a little bit more manageable down in distances would help a lot. A texture, I think the Texans should sign Brandon Scherff to at least a 1-year deal to help out Stroud. What do y'all think? Rocky brought him up too. He also brought up Hernandez, Dalton Risner. Hernandez is one that I'm the most surprised that he hasn't signed. That's pretty interesting to me.
Scherff's a guy that's had a lot of success in this league, but you don't know when a guy's going to hit the wall and just be done, and maybe mentally he's done.
Yeah, I mean, they feel like they did the best that they could with the options that they were given. But Hernandez is one that is surprising to me. Keith from L.A., the Texans faced an elite pass rush week one. Yeah, probably not a great week one opponent there. The Rams, who are pretty good at getting to the quarterback. Yeah. Can the Texans go out to a team like the Saints and have to overpay for line help, knowing they can't blow the season on, quote, we thought we had it figured out, but it did not work? Look, I think that the Texans could potentially be in on offensive linemen. I don't think they're going to be looking. I mean, yes, they'll be looking at the waiver wire. Yes. I don't think they're going to be looking at the waiver wire expecting a starter, though. You signed Laken Tomlinson. You moved Titus Howard to right guard. The center is Andrews, is a guy that has experience with Popovich. So, I mean, yes, I think they'll scour the waiver wire. I don't think they're going to scour the waiver wire with the idea that we're going to have a starter in place.
Well, if it gets to the waiver wire, you're right. I think that they'll look at everybody's camp situation to see if maybe there's a cap casualty because of salary for a veteran. That they'll, and I expect that Nick will do the due diligence the same way before they even get to waivers. Could you find a starter there? You might, depending on who it is, but it also depends on who you've already brought in and how they're performing.
Yeah, I think you might too. I just, again, it goes back to I don't think it's going to be that substantial of a difference. And then also, if you believe like in the cohesiveness of an offensive line and that they need to gel together and they work together, picking up a waiver wire guy, a cap casualty guy, and then plugging him in because he's bit better than the other guy would then rock that cohesiveness, mm-hmm. would rock that gelling. Caserio didn't adequately address the offensive line. I mean, he signed multiple free agents and then used a second rounder to draft one. Like, I just think that the offensive line was in such bad shape that it was very difficult to do so. They were trying to trade up for the guard from Bama. So, I mean, I don't know if you can really blame Caserio. You can blame Caserio, I think, for the state of the offensive line. I'm not sure that you can blame Caserio for the offensive line offseason activity. I think that's going too far.
It's not like you're going to sit there and you had a redo that there were so many offensive line that were out, alignment that were out there on the free agent market, and you had the money to spend that you could just go get the best offensive lineman out there. You got Cam Robinson, who was probably what, the best tackle on the market.
I mean, their offseason. I think he was second. Okay. I'd have to go back and pull, but I think he was second. Like, we can blame the offensive line and the offensive line not feeling comfortable with it. I totally get it. They were awful last year. They're probably less talented this season. Hopefully they're better coached. So I totally understand the disappointment of where the offensive line's at, the state of the offensive line for the Houston Texans. That said, Nick Caserio found three starters on this offensive line. Cam Robinson, who got a leg injury today. Hopefully that's not serious. He's your left tackle. Laken Tomlinson's your left guard. And then you drafted Tay Ursary, who's looking to be your right tackle. So, well, you don't love – he should have done more. He found three starters. Like, what do you mean he should have done? That's a lot. Well, it's a lot of starters.
If Andrew starts at center
60%. Didn't they bring him in last year?
They found him last year,
yeah,
as a tackle.
Wouldn't be an off-season move, but a guy you found.
Yeah, but I mean, you retained him, right? You signed him for another year. You brought him back after he was playing tackle, and now he's playing center. So you did bring him in technically this offseason, and he's playing a different position.
Yeah, I mean, he was on the team last year. It's hard for me to say that was
And I'm just for the sake of discussion.
He was released. No, he was this year. He was released in late April of 25. So Nick Caserio should have done more. He brought in 80% of a new offensive line. What do you mean he should have done more?
But if the players he brought in to start aren't good, why is that worthy of a pat on the back?
Give me the map of how he does more to this offensive line. Do that on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. Give me the map of how he should have done more. A guy who brought in 80% new starters on the offensive line. How could he have done more? Tell me how he could have done more. Also, there was some story. Is this the Washington Post? Is this what they call this paper in the D.C.? Newspaper's a dying industry. I think it's the D.C. Post, Washington Post. Laramie Tunsil with some quotes about last year's offensive line. Charles Strauser, last year's offensive line coach, maybe throwing Slowick under the bus. We'll get to that next to 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.